Welcome back to Talking of Books. I'm Isabel and my co-host is Penny McKenzie. And we're moving on to one of the authors, crime thriller writer, best-selling author Raymond Khoury, and his latest book, The Endgame. And we're delighted that we've got Shikha, we've got Tiki, Martin and Suzanne, who've all read it and are going to give us a little bit of an overview of what. So I'm going to start over in this corner with Tiki. No, Shikha. With Shikha, yes. Sorry. Shikha or Shaker, whichever you like. Tell us a little bit about the, just give us an overview of what happens to start with.
So this is, if you're really into action thrillers, I think this is really, this is a good book for you. A book which keeps you, there's a lot of suspense, a lot of drama. It's a good story. And it unfolds, it links the life of the special FBI agent Sean Riley, his past and his present somehow meet, and how he slowly uncovers a whole lot of secrets which lead on to something really big and really huge. I don't want to do a spoiler alert, no. So I'm not going to reveal the plot.
No, we would not be very happy, yeah. if you did that, absolutely. I can assure you.
But it's gripping.
Yes, and was it surprising? Did you get surprised?
Yes, it had very sharp twists, and it was...
Great. Suzanne?
I agree. It wasn't not a cliched page-turner that you can, you know, typically figure out the formula and who's going to be the guilty one and so forth. But it was so gripping and exciting, and as much as I loved it, I'm an absolutely terrible reader of suspense because I have to sneak down to the bottom of the page to see what happens so then I can go back and read the page in a much more relaxed state because I get too emotionally invested and I can't handle it.
But now, is there historical context to this novel?
It seemed present day. It's in North Carolina and Virginia, yeah. USA, where I'm from, so there was a lot of connections for me on a personal level, but it didn't have that historical context that I thought it, you know, for instance, The Last Templar and other books that he has written.
Yeah. So it's a little bit different to his earlier books, because, of course, he's very well known for The Last Templar.
Yes.
But The Book Spy, which is obviously a website that covers all things thriller, crime, said The Endgame isn't just Raymond Khoury's best book in years, it's one of the best books of 2016. So that's high praise.
Yes.
And he's such a great action. Didn't he start off in screenwriting? He was writing films and things like that.
Yeah, so
he's very visual.
He's written episodes of Waking the Dead, he's written episodes of Spooks, yeah. Which are very well known sort of English shows.
Yes. Sure. Martin.
Yeah, that makes sense that he's a screenwriter, because what I liked about the book is the way he structures it very nicely. He gives us chapters, but he also gives us days. And the days are really nice because you work with him as it's all happening in real time through the week. You know, we get Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Yeah. And the whole thing comes together very nicely. And it's not the sort of book where you can jump forward a bit to try to find the end, because it won't make sense to you. If you read through it, it's got endless twists and turns in it. I think it's a very good book. I'd not read Raymond Khoury before, but having read this, I've just bought The Last Templar.
Great. So, Tiki, if we could have your... tell us a little bit about the detective, because I'm sure he must be the mainstay of the story.
Yes, indeed. When I started reading the book, I have to say, the first few pages, and I thought, well, I don't know if I want to read this book because I'm not a great reader with suspense and thrillers, and I thought it might just turn out to be a little gory. But then I got into the character of Sean Riley.
The detective.
And I got intrigued by his life. And though we do not have a physical description in the book, I started to imagine him the way he would be. And I started to follow what he said and what he was after. And I think his character has been very well established in the book, because you want to know more about him. And he seems like somebody who's sensitive, but in a job which is very tough and difficult. He's making decisions which might include scruples, or... He's trying to, there's a lot of human element to him as
and
well.
And dilemmas through the
yes,
story.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Raymond Khoury is in conversation talking about The Endgame on Friday the 10th of March at 1:30 p.m. At the home of the festival, the Conference Centre at the Intercon Festival City. And Friday is always a packed day, so do check out. And if you like crime, we've got some masters and mistresses of crime, from Kathy Reichs to the crime-fighting elephant. That's one that I'm really...
Brilliant
really,
book.
Yes, yeah. Brilliant book. I mean, so check out the Crime Strand. There are lots and lots of crime writers. And a fun... If you like a fun evening, sign up for the Murder Mystery Dinner, which happens on the first day of the festival, Friday evening. And we're using our crime writers as consulting detectives. They will come round to each table and help you. It's been specially written. The thriller of the evening has been specially written, and actors are acting out the various parts, but involving the cast, the audience actually, who will be sat there trying to work out. And it is
and having a lovely dinner at the same time.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. No, it is a lovely evening.
There's quite a few interactive sessions which actually involve Raymond Kahuri. He's also involved in the Play in a Day, so that is going to be very interesting, I think, with local Alex Brun and Pusha Jha. They're going to be taking people through the idea of writing, rehearsing and performing a play in 24 hours. So that would be really interesting with Raymond. He's also involved in Flip the Script, screenwriters in the spotlight. There's a lot of people in Dubai who are passionate screenwriters, script writers for screenplays. So this is something for you. So if you want to be involved in screenplay writing, that's a session to look out for, and that's Ben Miller, Priyosh Jha and Raymond Kahuri, and that is on Friday the 10th of March at 10 a.m. The Play in a Day, that is on Saturday the 11th of March at 4:30. So these are very interactive sessions that people can come and take part in.
And actually learn a huge amount from one of the masters, cool. You know, one of the storytelling masters. So we're talking about Raymond Kahuri, the best-selling writer who will be at this year's Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, and his latest book, The Endgame. Now, Suzanne, have you read any other Raymond Kahuri books?
I have not. This is the first one.
Okay.
And I have to say that I'm going to just give you an example of a sentence that he's written to describe a teenage stepdaughter. He says, "Much like her mom, she was impossibly headstrong and as sharp as the bride's samurai blade, by turns delighting us with her growing independence and infuriating us with her dismissal of entirely reasonable boundaries." So there's something about his word craft that I also was very excited to read and continue reading, because it was so well crafted and designed.
Yes, and both you and Shika are members of the Festival Reading Group.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So can you just tell us a little bit about what it's like for listeners? We have every year a Festival Reading Group, and anyone can join, come along and be part of this wonderful group. And it's run by one of the programming team, Annabelle.
Yes. Yes.
Annabelle Corton, who does a fantastic job.
Yes.
So
we meet once a month, and prior to the meeting, we decide on the book that we're all going to read. It's really fun sharing, you know, what each person has a different point of view. So it's fun learning, it's fun hearing, and discussing the book for almost an hour and a half. It's interactive, and we all get to read, lines or stuff which we thought in the book touched us, or it really stood out, kind of a thing. Wonderful experience, actually.
And the thing is, having to verbalize what you think about a book, about the characters, actually sort of compounds it in your mind. You know, this is the book you've enjoyed, or this particular character sort of resonated with you, and it is very personal. It's actually,
yes,
reading books is very personal. So Martin, you're going to start on The Last Templar, one of his most famous books.
I've actually already started it. I'm a fair bit into it. Yeah, I am really enjoying it, and I like the way The Last Templar, I like the way that the book actually starts. It starts with the real impact. It's a robbery of a museum in New York, and four guys ride up the steps on white horses. It's been around for 10 years, the book, I realise now. And I bypassed it back in the day, because 10 years ago, every man and his dog was writing about Templars and lost chalices and following on from the Dan Brown thing. And so I discounted it. But I'm... having read the end game and how well it's written, you know, I realised that I did miss a good book, so I'm back at it. And what we were just saying then about creating your own characters, I think a really good storyteller, you will create your own character, and he doesn't need to work too hard for that to happen. The strange thing is, if we actually were all to sit here afterwards and say what we think the character to be, we'd probably all come up with a different one. And that's where film never quite manages to interpret a book as well as we do ourselves. So that's why I think reading is so much better.
That's the joy of reading, that you absolutely... There is a one-to-one conversation from the writer to the reader, each reader. True. And the impact of the writer's words and creations is unique on each one of us. And that's why book groups are fascinating, because all of you will have brought all your life experiences to each book. And, you know, your journeys, you've been on places, you've seen, you sort of imagine things. And it will be different. And that is why when we watch a film, and I love film, it is such a superb medium, but who's made the decisions for us are the director of the film, who casts and which bits they cut out, which bits they leave in.
Correct.
Many times they change the endings, all of that.
And they're restricted as well, aren't they, because they have a budget, whereas a writer can do things with the story that the film guys never could. So that's what's great about it.
But Raymond Kahuri is in this amazing position where he has done both. He is a screenwriter, he's very aware of the visual impact of what he writes, and he is a novelist. I mean, it must be great to have such control over both mediums.
But I think that's why, because he's got that mastery, why I think it's what Tiki said about he doesn't describe the characters, so he's not saying he's got dark hair or he's this or that, and that gives the when it comes to be a film, that actually gives them more leeway, because with Harry Potter, for example, there was an illustration on the first Harry Potter book and they couldn't move away from that. Mm. That particularly sort of set the scene that Harry Potter was going to have this scar and he was going to wear glasses and he'd have dark hair and all of that because of the illustration from the first book. And it can be limiting when something goes on to become a film. So Tiki, just to finish off Raymond Kahuri and The Endgame, last comments from you.
I would say it's one of the best suspense thrillers that I have read. It really got me into it, and I would have to agree with Martin. I would love to read the rest. I didn't realize it was a series of books where the two characters have been used before. Mm. So the interesting thing was when I finished the book and I started to read more about the author, I realized, wow, you know, it's a series, but in itself, the end game, there's no connection to the rest. So even if you just pick up one of the books, you can easily just read it.
Yeah, it's a story within itself.
Yeah. A story within itself, yes. And I think it was brilliant. Lots of twists and turns.
Thank you very much to all of our reviewers of The Endgame by Raymond Kahuri. Do come along and see him at this year's Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. After this break, we are going to be talking about The Kindness of Enemies by Leila Abu Leila, and we'll be speaking live with the author into the next section of the show.
From Agatha Christie to Jeffrey Archer, we've got it covered. Talking of books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books, and we're going to be reviewing one of my favourite authors, Leila Abu Leila's, her latest book, The Kindness of Enemies. And it has such high praise. She's three times been longlisted for the Orange Prize, shortlisted for the Commonwealth Writers Prize, and winner of the Cain Prize. And J.M. Coetzee says, a story of love and faith, all the more moving for the restraint in which it's written. And Aminata Fauna, talking about one of her earlier books, Lyrics Anime, Lyrics Alley, a story for all the senses, one to be savoured at leisure. It's great that Shika has read and loved The Kindness of Enemies. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the story? It is literary fiction, but it really, really casts a completely new light on belonging, about being an immigrant, and about assumptions that can be made. So just run briefly over the plot of The Kindness of Enemies.
So I quite enjoyed this book. It's in fact my first book by Leila Abu Leila, and it's really a historical fiction. Takes you back to the time of the main character. The protagonist is Shamil Imam, and you know, of how it's really talking about. He's really so awe-inspiring, so noble as a you know character. It also the book actually unravels the true origin of the term jihad. You know how it's come about, and how.
Yes, she has an old. You know, it is looking at things sometimes from a different viewpoint.
Yes, it was.
Now is Natasha. Natasha is one of the protagonists, isn't she? And so there's a historical element of it, and there's also the
modern element.
The modern element, and she's from mixed parentage.
Correct.
And she meets someone at university, doesn't she? Who then. This is where things start to, and we don't want to spoil it for our listeners, but it is a gripping read.
Yes, it is, and it's a beautiful story, well told, and like you rightly pointed out, the mixing of these two eras, you know, it flows seamlessly. It doesn't, it's not jerky at all. You can actually see the similarities between the two eras as well, and there's a lot of learning, because as I actually went on the net and Googled more about Shamil, and wanting to know, you know, the kind of age, the day, the age he lived in, and all his life he kept fighting for, you know, what he truly believed in, which was jihad was really a different term then, and he died a life of a martyr. So that, you know, for me was a learning all over again.
Yes. So this was set, what, in the 1850s?
19th century. Imam Shamil was otherwise called the Lion of Dagestan.
Correct.
And he was a 19th century warrior chief.
Yes.
Who was trying to, he fought to protect his people and their traditions against the invading forces of Tsarist Russia. And this is a figure who, Natasha, who is of mixed parentage, is currently researching. And then we have the other character who she meets at university.
Correct.
And he has a relation, doesn't he? They're, he's sort of a descendant of this imam.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it is
and this
fascinating
thing of lack of belonging is so true in the times we live in, you know. So there are a couple of characters both in the historical era as well as in the modern time who are you know who are from different places and are totally lost, and yet you know how they, I think it's very, very, it touches you because it's real.
Reviewers have said that she's written the story with characters that are morally complex and really fascinating, even the ones that people don't necessarily like reading about in the book. Did you find that as well, that the characters were just engaging and honest?
Yes, absolutely. You do want to read it now. The plot is quite engaging. You want to complete the whole book.
Yes. Now, Leila Abu Leila is from Sudan. Her family moved to Dubai. She was in Dubai for 5 years when she was writing her first book, and now she's in Scotland. And so the book does go between Sudan, Russia, and Scotland. So she's got her descriptions of place and people within those places is absolutely fantastic. I mean, she really does hold you, and the characters and the place are very important in her novels.
Correct, yes, absolutely.
But isn't that such an indicator of people who have lived in Dubai, that you've lived in many different places, that you carry with you a sense of that place, you can then translate it into a novel, which is authentic because you know and you have been to the places that you're talking about, even in the historical context.
Yes, correct. And I mean the title, just think about the title for a moment. You know, that is, how can the kindness of enemies. I mean, what does that say to us? Immediately, and I'm a great person for picking up books that have complex
titles
like that. It's a very strong title, and the cover is extremely atmospheric, but the kindness of enemies.
Mm. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
And there is, there's all these proverbs, aren't there? And there are, you know, keep your enemy close and all of these. And in Arabic, there are some... there are some quite complex proverbs or sayings that have to do with enemies and how you treat enemies if they're your guest and things like that. So certainly during her session at the festival, I want to ask her, why did she choose that title?
Mm.
Because it is an intriguing title right from the beginning. She has me hooked.
Yeah.
Now, we have a question for our listeners. If you've been listening carefully, you probably know the answer to this. Leila Abu Leila's session will be on the 4th of March, the Saturday, the 4th of March at 5 p.m. The question is, where was Leila Abu Leila born? Was it Sudan, or was it Libya? So text in your answers to 4001 and please put your name, and we will be contacting winners, anyone who wins two tickets to any of the sessions that we are running prizes for today will be contacted by phone tomorrow or the next day, because the SMS message actually on our screens is not, we're not getting them, but it is going to the main server. So Elaine very kindly said she'll be able to pick them up and press magic buttons and choose our winners.
And a reminder of our previous question, which is John Hemingway is an author that is attending the festival this year, and he is the grandson of which famous author? We've got that coming up. We've also got other sessions that involve Leila Abu Leila,
which we'll be talking about after this, because we're going to take a short break. We're going to get Leila Abu Leila on the phone, and then we can also talk about her other sessions. Do stay tuned to Talking of Books.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. And we're joined on the line by Leila Abu Leila. Welcome, Leila.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. I'm Isabel. You remember me?
Of course I do, Isabel, of course.
Yes, and we're so looking forward to welcoming you back to the festival, our ninth festival. You've been to at least, if I'm right, have you been to two before?
I've been to two before where I participated, and I was at the very first one as a member of the audience.
Okay.
So that was very exciting for me.
Yes. Well, our first festival, we had 65 authors, and we ran it over 3 days. We've now got 181 authors over 9 days. It's absolutely packed to the hilt, but we're delighted you're joining us. Now, Can you tell us a little bit about where you got the inspiration for your latest book, The Kindness of Enemies?
I read an article once about Imam Shamil and how in the 19th century he led a resistance against Russian imperial expansion. But I was more interested in his personal story of how his son, he had an 8-year-old son who was taken hostage by the Russians and actually brought up as a godson to the Tsar. And so this was very humiliating for Imam Shamil, how his son was growing up far away from him and being brought up by, you know, Christians. And he always wanted him to bring him back. And so he kidnaps this Georgian princess in order to exchange her for his son. So it's a very, dramatic story. So I thought it was, you know, really fantastic. And I was wanting to know more about it.
And so that's where you started, because it is a very, very atmospheric and beautiful book. And I'm intrigued by the wonderful title, but I'm going to ask you that at the festival, where The Kindness of Enemies came from, because I think, you know, there could be lots of answers, but I'm not going to spoil it for anyone. We'll do that at the festival. We're joined by Shikha, who is a member of the festival book group, and she's read The Kindness of, one of the books that was read at the book group was The Kindness of Enemies. So what question would you like to ask Leila Abu Leila?
Yes, hello, Leila, and I must congratulate you. It's a wonderful book. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I had this question. I mean, the character of Imam Shamil is so beautifully sketched. So what kind of research went into, you know, it actually developing such a, it's thorough, it's complete. So I hope someday to also start writing. So I'd love to have some inputs from you in terms of what is it that went behind the creation of this character?
Yeah. Oh, a lot of research. I did a lot of research about him and read a lot of books.
Okay.
And I read books from different points of view. I mean, of course, there was the Russians writing about him.
Okay.
And then there were also, you know, his own people or you know, his side telling the story.
Okay.
So there's always very different, you know, the two perspectives to his story, and I also spent a lot of time looking at pictures of him. I don't know why. I really liked the pictures of him, and I started dreaming about him. and so it was kind of very intense, it was really very, that's a good part of it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I didn't want to have a lot of research in the novel. You know,
okay.
I had to choose only the things that would be, you know,
relevant.
To keep the novel going and so that people don't get stuck in a lot of political or military details. I didn't
sure.
want to have a lot of that. So it's very much the family story, the human side of the story.
Okay.
Layla, when you introduce a historical character into a book of fiction, how difficult is that as a concept?
It's not so difficult because in a way the story is there for you. You don't need to make up a story. The story is there. The excitement is there anyway.
Mm.
The difficult part is that sometimes you feel constricted by that, and that you want to, you want to use your imagination. You want to take it in a different direction. You want to add things that aren't there, and then you have to make these choices of whether you're going to be very true to the history or whether you're going to add from your imagination. In my case, I was quite true to the history, but what was difficult was that in historically there was so many characters.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't only kidnap in real life. He kidnaps the princess and her sister and her grandmother and a whole cast of servants and the whole group of people plus the governess, and so I felt that I couldn't do this. I couldn't handle this huge cast of characters. So a lot of the characters were compounded. You know, I had to stick to a limited number of characters. Because otherwise, I felt it wouldn't work on the page. So this kind of shrinking or this kind of compounding of characters was the challenge for me.
Well, I think that's an admirable job that you do, because it's a difficult decision to make. How close to stick to reality and how much do you want to make the story readable? At last year's festival, there was a wonderful session about historical fiction versus history and whether it was a good thing or a bad thing. And personally, I feel that historical fiction is a wonderful way to lead into a genuine interest in history.
True.
So what you've done is you've written a beautiful book that people can enjoy. If you've had to write it in a way that made it a little bit more palatable or readable, then I applaud that, quite frankly. And I don't think any historian should take a moral high ground on whether that can or can't be done. So,
And you were talking about, just before we went back on air, about the link with Bettany Hughes and Istanbul, because part of her historical fact, as it were, covers some of this.
Indeed. So the book, one of the books we'll be reviewing later in the session, I think we'll be speaking to Bettany as well later, is her book about Istanbul, and a large portion of that is dedicated to the struggle between Russia and the Ottoman territories. And of course, that's the this particular subject that your historical novel is about is covered, let's say, in that book in a sort of very historical way. So again, it's one of the wonderful things about the festival, that we get these links between historical novels, real history, and all the different parts that go with that.
Layla, you're doing a session on a radio play, and this is we're on radio at the moment. So can you tell us a little bit about that? What's behind it? How you came to be involved in it?
Yes, I mean, this is a story that I wrote as a short story, and then I adapted it as a radio play for the BBC. So it was aired on BBC Radio 4, but now in the festival, it's going to be read out by real actors on stage, as it were. So that's very exciting, and I'm really sort of looking forward to that very much.
We've never done that before, Layla. So it's a fantastic first for the festival to have obviously a successful radio play that's been on Radio 4, and then bring it to Dubai, and then have new characters take on the story and go through the process.
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear them, and I haven't listened to it recently, so it's going to be sort of all fresh and new for me. So I'm excited about that.
And
it's called The Mystic Life.
The Mystic Life. So what is it?
Yeah.
What is it? You know, what is the thread of the story? This short story.
It's a kind of like Romeo and Juliet in a way of having two young people, you know, getting together and falling in love, but they come from very different backgrounds. And the young man in the story, and actually the original name of the short story was The Boy from the Kebab Shop. So he's a young man who works in a kebab shop in Britain, and he's religious, and he meets this other girl who is Muslim, but she's not religious at all. And actually, her mother is an alcoholic, and she just doesn't come from this kind of background at all. And so they find themselves, you know, attracted to each other, even though they're very different. And I think that the tension in the story comes from the fact that she feels that he's drawing her to a mystic life, and that she's not sure whether she wants to be sort of drawn into that life or not. So
that sounds most interesting, and that's happening on the Sunday evening, Sunday the 5th.
Sunday the 5th at 7 p.m. Lele, you also have another session which I think is going to be absolutely brilliant for people who live in Dubai particularly, which is Culture Shock Facing the Unknown, where you're going to be with Paul McHadlin, who comes from Scotland and has travelled around the world and is now involved with the National Youth Orchestra and has also been working in Iraq with the orchestra there. And you come from the sort of Arabic world, and you've moved across and you are now living in Aberdeen. So that's an interesting connection between the two of you. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're going to talk about in Culture Shock?
Yes, I'm going to talk about how I came. When I first came to Scotland, I was in my mid-20s. I actually landed in Aberdeen Airport with a 2-week-old baby and a 4-year-old son, and my husband was working on the oil rigs offshore in the North Sea. So it wasn't really very, you know, it wasn't easy for me, and I had come from Sudan, and it was a very different culture. And what made it harder was that I actually didn't expect to have any difficulties, because in Sudan I lived a very cosmopolitan lifestyle. It was actually in the capital, it was sort of similar to the life that a lot of people have in Dubai, where you have, you know, different cultures coming together, where you know, there is a Western element, but at the same time there's a lot of respect for tradition, and people are comfortable with each other. There's a lot of, you know, marriages across nationalities. My husband's mother was English and his father was Sudanese, so I was very comfortable in that world. And then when I came to Aberdeen, suddenly everybody around me, most of them had lived in one place all their life. They weren't interested in the rest of the world. They were kind of very parochial, and so it was quite hard for me to get to grips with that. And so that's what I'll be talking about. It's going to be about the difficulties really of culture shock and of moving from one place to the other.
Leila, it will be lovely to have you back at the festival. Are you excited about coming back to the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature in its 9th year?
I'm very, very excited, and it's really special to have seen something grow from the very, 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 very beginning. And as you were saying, how, you know, it was very small at the beginning, and then it just kind of grew over the years. And although even I very clearly remember the very first session, I think, in the festival, which was Chimamanda Adichie and Frank McCourt and Kate Moss, and they were talking about prizes, and it was you know, the very first session, and it was quite small. And now to see the festival growing like that, it's just wonderful.
I can remember that too, because that was a fabulous session, and different opinions from writers who'd all been award winners. So it will be absolutely lovely to have you back here with us, Leila Abu Leila. And we will be letting everyone know about the radio play, the culture shock session, and also the session on your wonderful book that has been part of the Festival Reading Group's book. So enjoy the rest of your weekend in, I don't know if it's cold in Scotland.
It's cold, yes.
Well, surprisingly, it's been raining here today, so we're hoping we're going to get rid of all the rain before you arrive.
Okay.
All the best.
Thank you, Leila. Look forward to meeting you at the festival.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for having me on the program. Bye-bye.
Wonderful to speak to Leila Abu Leila, who will be joining us for along with the other 180-plus writers between the 3rd to the 11th of March. And we're going to be talking about Tanya Landman after this short break. Do stay tuned.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8. Now, back to the team.
And welcome back to Talking of Books. You're in the studio with Penny McKenzie and Isabel Abuhul. Our guest sort of host for today is Charles Nass from Montegrappa, who has kindly come in and hosted the show with us and told us all about what's happening with Montegrappa at the festival. And we're also in the studio with Martin, and we've also got Sheikha still in the studio with us. We're going to be talking now about Tanya Landman, who is a festival author who's coming across to talk to us about the books that she is going to be writing. Martin, you've read her latest book, haven't you, which is Hell and High Water, which I think we could classify as a young adult.
Yeah, it's a young adult book. It's a lovely book. It's not the sort of thing I'd pick off the shelf to read for myself, because it is definitely geared for young adult. But as I read the book, it reminded me of the sort of stuff I read when I was younger, and I like the way she's put the book together. It flows really nicely. The opening few pages are fantastic. She gets you hooked very early on. One of the nice things about this book as a young adult book is it deals with lots of issues. It deals with some of the issues that youngsters face today. A 15-year-old lad of mixed race losing his father rather suddenly. And the hardships he faces. There's quite a lot of interesting life lessons. He gets bullied. He finds a friend. People are who you suspect them to be early on. There's some deception.
And Martin, what sort of time is this set in?
It's set in Cornwall around the 17th. I think the exact year is 1752. It deals with typical bit of Cornish smuggling, and there's a bit of an insurance scam going on with the boat getting sunk. One of the nice things about this story, which I really enjoyed, is that as you're working your way through it, you want the character to discover things. It's not written perhaps how an adult mystery thriller would be, where it's keeping you guessing. You actually start to sort of think, when will the, you've already worked some of it out as you're reading it, and you're thinking, when will the character discover it? And you want the good things to happen to him, and he almost gets there, then he doesn't. So you're willing him to find the solutions, and you're willing things to go right for him, and it engages you, which is really nice. It reminds me of the Agatha Christie when I was a kid, or the Enid Blyton stuff. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot in this book, and it's very well written.
And Sheikha, you've started reading it. You haven't gotten all the way through it. Do you agree with what Martin's saying?
Yes, I've just started with Tanya's book, which is The Buffalo Soldier.
So that's another one.
That's a different one, yeah.
Hello, High Water.
Oh, read Hello, High Water.
Yes.
And it's interesting. It's very, it's actually a little shocking, because it talks about the brutalities during the times of the American Civil War, and
also quite shocking how young some of the people were that actually were involved in that war.
And the story itself, imagine a young girl is forced to register in the army as a guy, because that's the only way she can stay alive. and she, the savagery and the, you know, the manner in which they the life she leads as an army guy.
Do you think that Tanya Landman exposes history to teen readers in a very empathetic way? That because some of the information that she gives in her books is very raw, you know. So do yes. you think that there's something that engages young teens and makes them understand the hardships and the realities of life at a time which they are learning about?
I think she does that very well. I think the way that she uses central characters around the age of her audience is clever, and the level of suspense and mystery that they're caught up in is the sort of thing that would engage a reader of the age of the audience she goes for. And irrespective of the fact that Hell and High Water was set in 1752, she's dealing with issues that a teenager today could be facing. So and she gives hope to teenagers, which is a nice book, and it's interesting.
I shall read that. That's on my
it's good. And she picks the age group specifically to match her audience and how they engage with adults and the deceptions that they have to face and the hardships, and you are willing them to succeed, which is good.
She's won prizes for her works. I think the Carnegie Medal for Buffalo Soldier, if I'm not correct. So it's obviously her writing is considered to be worthy of prizes, which is great. She writes a lot of historical fiction. Most of the books that she has written ties back to times that are past and allows children to get a really good insight into what's happening. If people are interested in going along and having a session with her, listening, being part of one of her sessions, the Hell and High Water session is on Saturday the 4th of March at 6:30. That'll be covering Buffalo Soldier and also Hell and High Water. So that's what she Buffalo Soldier being what she got her Carnegie Medal for. She's got an interesting session called Lights, Camera, Action, Zombies. So that should be a fascinating session. That's for sort of a little bit of a younger age group. That's for children who are aged between 8 and 12. And she will be talking about where authors get their ideas from. So all of our budding young listeners who want to know and want to write, this is something that maybe you might enjoy finding out about where authors get their inspiration from. She is going to be one of the authors that takes part in the murder mystery dinner, so she'll be one of the authors that comes along and gives you little hints and advice about which way you should be going when it comes to deciding who done it. And she's also involved in a session called Penning the Past, which is where history meets fiction. Yeah. So that's with Leila Abulela, who we've just spoken about, Tanya, who we're speaking about now, and also Simon Scarrow, who we will discuss a little bit later in the session. That's on Friday the 3rd of March from 6 to 7. So there's a lot of sessions that Tanya is involved in across a broad spectrum of subjects, which again is what the festival is all about. There's this whole mixture of genres and age groups and ideas that get put together.
Yes.
Going back to Tanya's book on the Hell and High Water, do you think that there's something of a follow-on that can go on from that book?
I think there probably could be, but she deals with characters around a specific age, so I think perhaps this story did end, but I'm sure she'll produce others. One of the great things about her writing is her use of language. For a young adult reading this book, she's not using slang. She's able to... She writes correctly and she writes nicely. Yeah. And so when we see what's being done to language lately with a lot of abbreviations and, you know, constructing a whole sentence in only 140 letters for Twitter, I think it's nice to pick something up like this, which uses words well, and it should stand young adults in good stead to read this type of literature, because it's not stuck in the period. Although it happens in 1752 and it's interesting, you're reading it, it's almost as if you wrote like that and wrote about today and what you did today, it spans the time zones.
And that's something that historical novelists can achieve that historians just can't, is to really put you in and get a feeling of what it was like then and there and how you could relate to those feelings. I think the one example that I will never forget is the description by Amin Maalouf of the Mamluk king of Egypt, of Cairo, his body swinging when it was hung from the gates of Cairo after it was captured by the Ottomans. And when you read that in a history book, it's never the same. But when you sort of see a body swinging in the wind and you find out who it is, it's just an emotional connection that you get and you understand. So historical fiction that's presented in a way that you can immediately capture the imagination is a wonderful way to introduce history and a period and what the real fears and concerns were for an individual at that time.
Yeah. Do you know, this book is slightly different to the other books that Tanya Lambin has written. You know, when she's wrote Apache and Buffalo Soldier, they were about very turbulent, epic times in history. Whereas Hell and High Water is a slightly smaller story, isn't it? It's not. It's very personal for the characters that are involved, and the history is minutiae of history, as opposed to, you know, the American Civil War, for example, which is a very vast
But topic. Cornwall has got amazing history, and as a child I used to holiday in St Ives. I had an old aunt who had a cottage down there, so I know the little smugglers' coves. When I was 10, 12, 13, 14, I was running about on the beaches down there, and to think what was going on in 1752 is actually quite interesting to... And you can relate to it. And Cornwall may not be quite as big as the American Civil War, but Cornwall has history. It is history.
Oh, of course. There's always stories. Yeah, every place has wonderful
And the
stories.
Seafaring history of the Cornwall. British Navy and Cornwall, of course.
Penzance and Truro. And
I think we'll come back to that a little bit later. We're going to take a short break. This is Talking of Books. You've been listening to us for approximately 2 hours.